patients can see through when you're trying to sell them something or whether you're trying to be genuine. And we have a little sort of motto that, you know, essentially we want to make a difference and whatever we're selling needs to make a difference. And I think that really comes across when you're explaining the service and how it will help the patient. Hi, I'm Luke Vanderite from South City Pharmacy in Wagga Wagga, New South Wales. And joining me on the show is my business partner, Michael O'Reilly. And you're listening to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast, brought to you by the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Focusing on pharmacy management and ownership, the PBCN podcast supports the improvement and growth of your business performance with insights and advice from a range of industry professionals. The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way.
Any significant change to a business comes with risk. Sure, others may have gone before you and done the same thing and been successful and made changes for the better, but that's no guarantee that you'll be successful as well, is it? Plus, some changes need to occur while the business is still operating. You can't simply shut the shop down for a few weeks, make the changes, and then reveal all for the better when you are ready. Yet, if you want to achieve your goals and be the best you can be, you probably don't have a choice but to take the risk. The South City Wagga Wagga team's goal each day is to, and I quote, make a difference in our patients' lives and do that by trying to become a premier health destination in the region. Luke Vanderite and Michael O'Reilly, business partners at South City Wagga Wagga, decided the best way to achieve that goal was to debanner the pharmacy and expand the business into a professional services pharmacy. There's no doubt they've had some great success along the way, and speaking to them off air, it's really obvious how proud they are of their work, the pharmacy, and most importantly, their team overall. And that recently resulted in them winning the Excellence in Community Engagement Award at the 2018 APP Conference and ultimately the Guild Pharmacy of the Year. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the PBCN podcast, made possible by the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. I'm your host, Daniel Oyston, and it's great to have you joining us on the show. Listen in as I speak to Luke and Michael about their success so far and learn about some of the services, specialist lines of products they offer, their contribution to the wider health community in the region, and of course, some of the challenges they've overcome along the way. Here's Luke and Michael. Luke, congratulations on winning the 2018 Guild Pharmacy of the Year Award in the category of community engagement. What does it mean to win the award?
Oh, thank you very much, firstly. Look, it's a fantastic, winning the award's a fantastic recognition to a few people, mainly the team at South City Pharmacy, firstly. The staff that we have are fantastic and they put a lot of hard work into the shop each and every day. And to put it simply, this award belongs to them. So it's really great, a great achievement for them to win the award. I think anyone that would have seen the award, our sort of longer serving staff manager or staff persons, our retail manager, Sandra, and she was quite emotional after we won. And it just shows the amount of sort of, you know, passion and energy they put into the business. They really do own the award. And like I said, this award is their award in many ways. So it's just fantastic recognition to those or to the team. It's also great recognition to the healthcare professionals in town we've worked with. We've developed a lot of programs locally in Wagga, and it just shows what great results can be achieved when we all work together. And then thirdly, we've got to build on those programs again moving forward. So winning the awards brought a lot of attention to the programs, and you know, we're not going to sit back and just rest on sort of what we've achieved so far. We really want to build those programs further and increase our relationships with the healthcare professionals in town. So it gives us an opportunity to do that also.
Outstanding. Now, we're going to hear from your business partner a little bit later on in the show, in between some of your answers. But you personally, I understand that you were in the industry, but then you retrained, moved away, but then you were lured back. What's the story there?
Yeah, I've had quite an interesting story where I've moved around quite a bit since university. I started my pharmacy career on the central coast of New South Wales, and then moved up to Thredbo for the ski season, running the pharmacy there, which I learned a lot about trauma, which was a fantastic period to do, and also got to enjoy the slopes. I then moved back to the Central Coast and then finally moved back down to Sydney. And, yeah, as you said, I did get a bit of itchy feet in the industry and thought, look, is pharmacy for me? And I actually had a passion for videos and really loved travel videos, and my dream was probably one day to get on Getaway. Not as a presenter, but I thought, hey, someone's got to be operating the cameras and someone's got to be holding the sound mic. So I thought maybe that could be me. And so I went back and did a journalism course in Sydney. And funnily enough, one of my colleagues or that I studied with is actually a journalist now for the Australian Journal of Pharmacy. But anyway, after a year, I sort of thought, you know, this is good. I've got a bit of background now and a bit of training in journalism and did a bit of work for Fox Sports News briefly, which was quite a tough job. You know, that's a 24-hour news channel. And, yeah, a lot of sort of 2 a.m. starts and a lot of sports over in Europe. And that finally got the better of me, and I still was working a little bit in pharmacy and ended up being a freelance videographer and worked a little bit on the Australian Open Golf, filming for their podcasts and filming for their app online. But then eventually the opportunity at South City came back in Wagga, and it was too good an opportunity to miss up. And essentially I put it all together and, you know, thought the grass isn't greener, and I really still did love pharmacy, and I figured that was the best move for me, and I'm really happy that I moved down to Wagga and haven't looked back.
So your pharmacy is South City. Set the scene for us. Can you give us a bit of a snapshot of the pharmacy?
Yeah, firstly, we're located in a mini shopping centre. It's quite a funny store. Essentially, Wagga's a place that's surrounded by floodplains, so the town really can only go two ways. And as a sort of to encourage people to move out one way, that they put, or the council put, a mini shopping centre out at South City. So it's about, it's got a big Coles and has about 13 other retail outlets, and you can still walk 400 metres and hit farmland. So it's very much a developing suburb. We're open 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. 7 days a week, and we have about 30 staff to accommodate this, including 7 pharmacists. Shop is roughly about 260 square metres, and it's a long, thin store, which creates its own challenges with regards to sort of, you know, looking after customers. We've got a long, thin dispensary, so we really have to be on our feet moving around the shop all day. We've got a large compounding lab and a large consult room as well, which fits into the 260 square metres also.
Michael O'Reilly, you're Luke's business partner. Welcome to the show. I'm keen to explore collaboration in more detail later on, but in the spirit of helping set the scene a little bit more around the pharmacy, can you give a snapshot of the key stakeholders that the pharmacy collaborates with?
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Daniel. The first one, of course, is Luke, my business partner. In terms of stakeholders, he and I are the biggies. So everything that we do together, run ideas past each other and bounce things off each other. Secondly, we do a lot of work with Instago, a wonderful group in Sydney that helps us with our marketing and our HR and our advertising. And thirdly, we're both on the clinical council with the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network. So we also do quite a lot of work with them.
Luke, you debannered to become a professional services pharmacy. Can you let us know, when did that transition start, and was it a challenge to reposition the new business model and approach to your current patients?
Yeah, absolutely. So we took over the store in 2014, and in May 2016, we sort of made the decision that for us to survive and for us to move forward and to engage our staff, we wanted to be a professional services pharmacy, and then one of the better ones, or one of the best we could in the region. And we really had to change our customers' attitudes as to what we were now offering. Essentially, I guess the older school model was to try and serve people and get them in and out as quickly as possible, just so, you know, you get the next person in, serve the next person. It was a high turnover of people. Whereas now we actually, or when we became a professional services pharmacy, we actually had to slow people down and say, look, why don't you stay in store? Why don't you come and do this meds review? Why don't you come and you know, have this COPD check? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And it's sort of just changing the patient's mindset of what we offer, and just that sort of slowing down the pace and getting people to stay in store more.
Michael, how do you see the role of a professional services pharmacy fitting into the overall health management of the wider community?
GPs, let's face it, Daniel, are very time poor. And as a pharmacist, I believe that our industry has a role to play to ease some of the pressure on the GPs. You know, we're in a regional centre in Wagga, and pressure on doctors here is probably worse than it is in the cities. So getting into doctors in Wagga is extremely difficult. So that gives pharmacy in regional areas an opportunity to probably tap into some of that demand and be what I would call primary healthcare, so that sometimes you become the first port of call. If someone can't get into a doctor, they often will go to the pharmacy with dermatology things, with paediatric things with kids, with management of medications. I'm not saying we can take their place by any means, but I think pharmacy, particularly in those regional areas, can really help contribute to the health of the community, because we're accessible. You know, no one makes an appointment to come and see a pharmacist. At South City, we've got multiple pharmacists on duty, so we prided ourselves in people being able to basically walk in off the street and sit down with a professional. I don't think you can do that with your accountant or your doctor or your engineer or your solicitor. So I like to think that we're literally primary healthcare, and that we have a very important role to play in community health.
Do doctors see it that way? Are the doctors generally receptive to the load that you can take off them in such a busy area?
That's been something, I guess, that's been won over time, Daniel. I think, we were one of the first pharmacies in Wagga that were doing blood pressure testing years ago, and there was, a little bit of angst from the GPs that pharmacy was perhaps trespassing on their turf, if you like. But it's interesting, as the years have gone by, we are much more heavily involved in that process. In fact, the doctors are referring people now for that kind of thing. You know, the flu vaccination program is a great example of that. With the changes in the law that allow pharmacists to give vaccination to basically kids, anyone over 18, that's opened up a whole scope of practice for professional pharmacy as well. People that maybe wouldn't have made a 10 o'clock appointment at the GP's and waited till 11 before they got in and sat in a waiting room full of people that weren't well, they can just pop into your pharmacy and without an appointment, get your flu vaccine. So I think our role in that, although the doctors protect their turf, and I can't blame them for that, I think they've come to accept that with their waiting lists and their busy, busy days, that there certainly is a place for us, the pharmacists, and that's certainly the case in Wagga, that we've been involved in a much more collaborative way, where the GPs say, well, they're not the opposition anymore. Those guys and the pharmacists and the doctors, we're all working for the same people, which are the patients. So it's far, far better if we work together. We've got the same goals in mind. And I think those turf wars are probably dissipating somewhat, I reckon.
Luke, you mentioned opening hours before, and you are open late. I'm guessing you have patients who come and visit you who can't access their GP later in the day, early in the evening, but they are looking for medical advice. How do you prepare the pharmacy staff for that change?
Yeah, look after hours is a challenge for us, but something that we've now gotten used to. And you're right, a lot of people can't get into their doctors, after hours. And there's a few things we have done to prepare that. Firstly, all our staff are quite well trained, and our pharmacists are quite well trained, so they're very aware of when to sort of refer patients and when not to. And often we've become sort of a form of triage, where patients come in after the doctor and said, look, I've done this, I've cut myself, my kid's not well, what should we do? And we have to be able to make the appropriate call on whether to refer or whether it can wait till the GP the following day. So we do have close ties with the after-hours practices in Wagga, and also we do have the access to the hospital if we do need. But staff have to be trained up to be able to make that call. And when we all did our mental health first aid training, which was offered by our primary health network, we got 11 people trained in mental health first aid. And that was a really good, you see a lot of people who may be in mental health crisis, sort of especially late, and just sort of A, recognising the problems and when people are in need, and B, knowing what to do and when to, or how to appropriately refer or when to call an ambulance. That training's been crucial in allowing us to recognise that.
Now, you outlined that the store is long and thin, and that presents some overall challenges. One of those would be offering consultations. Did you do much to reconfigure the store to be able to accommodate those consultations?
Yes, we did. We actually had a smaller, when we, in 2016, a smaller consult room, I would guess, in sort of a big, busy period or section of our store. And we actually, it just wasn't keeping up with the needs that were required of a consult room and you know, the professional services that we offered. So what we had to do, we decided to move the consult room to a quieter area of the pharmacy where there was less foot traffic, and we built it up so it was a bigger size. So that's sort of something that now we have this really big consult space. We actually also put two mini sitting booths as well, so we can have those less those meds checks type conversation that don't require a private room in this space as well. So we just again created that space where people can sit down and people can have that conversation. But the large consult room was definitely a bonus for us. And look, to be honest, we'd love to have two more of them just like it. It's in such high demand now that it's sort of bursting at the seams.
And how the staff engage the transition? Are there any changes or ideas or innovations that they've brought to the table for you and your business partner to consider?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like our staff have been key in sort of our transition. And one of the things that we needed to succeed is to make sure that our key staff are really on board with becoming a professional services pharmacy. If they weren't on board, they're delivering the services. It just wasn't going to work. Thankfully, they were, and they've sort of contributed the whole way through it. We've sort of got a theory where I try not to micromanage the staff too much. And if they have an idea, they're welcome to implement it without my go-ahead. I've always sort of there for, you know, advice, or if they want to, you know, chat an idea or throw it around. Essentially, if they've got a good idea and they think it'll increase our workflow, or if they think it'll increase productivity, they're welcome just to implement it without my permission. We saw this a little bit when recently we had we sort of had to merge a diabetes educator into our staff. In Wagga, the Diabetes New South Wales office shut, and we decided to incorporate the diabetes educator into our pharmacy. So there's a lot of sort of things that we had to change, sort of, you know, how do we book the diabetes educator? How do we arrange the room for the diabetes educator? What do we do when someone comes in for a pump supply and they want to see him? There's a few things we had to arrange with the sort of integration, I guess, of all the systems, which our staff were a big part of. And it's simply a job like I can't do on my own. So we rely on the staff to help us and push it in the directions they think will work best.
Michael, what are the health areas that you focus on in terms of the increased value over a basic pharmacy, and how do you engage patients around that additional value that you can deliver?
Well, there's a few. I guess the primary one that we work on is diabetes. Diabetes New South Wales used to have an office here in Wagga, and they employed, you know, they were involved in sales, but most importantly, they employed a diabetes educator. Now, when they closed that office, Luke and I saw that, one, there was a wonderful service to Wagga that was going to be lost, but secondly, the diabetes educator, Mark, that worked there, we'd worked quite closely with him when he was there, we offered him a job. So he came on board to our pharmacy as he's a credentialed diabetes educator, and we'll get back to that in a sec about why that's important. But it was around about the time when the insulin pump supplies were becoming available through pharmacy. Although we've got a wonderful staff and we train them hard, pump supplies was a bit of a black art to us. So having Mark, having a diabetes educator in store, not permanently, like he was working 2 days a week, but he was a wonderful resource for us. We find that his knowledge of diabetes has washed through the staff, particularly the pharmacists, the interns that work with us. Being a credentialed diabetes educator means that he can see patients as part of the care plan. GPs managing a diabetic would often initiate a care plan for their patient, which is entitles them to some visits to paramedic people, I guess, so dietitian, exercise physiology, podiatry and diabetes, and those visits are covered by Medicare. So Mark can actually work in our pharmacy seeing patients with diabetes, as long as they're on care plan, it costs the patient nothing. And we actually can get a payment as part of the care plan from Medicare. So that removed a massive barrier that people could see. I mean, Mark still sees patients privately, but let's face it, the far greater majority of his visits are covered by Medicare. And we found that over time, that's grown our insulin business, for example. You just attract people with diabetes when you have a diabetes educator who's experienced and known. He wasn't a new person to Wagga. He's been working there for a couple of years. And you attract some money through higher caps. So diabetes we certainly chase. We've grown our COPD business. We've been partnering with Novartis and the Lung Foundation working on a screening program for COPD. Novartis has helped us get hold of what's called an AirSmart, which is a smartphone app that connects to a little machine that you can breathe into and give us a read on your lung function. It's not diagnostic, but it's certainly a great screening tool. So we look at smokers, ex-smokers, passive smokers, people that buy a lot of insulin, people that buy a lot of cough medicine. And that's been quite well accepted. You know, we went to the respiratory physicians first to get their blessing, and that's washed down through our business. So we're doing screening now, and you never want to find a positive screen. But we found a few and they've gone on to be treated early, which is the whole thing with COPD. The last thing we're working on are some specialist medical braces. We're the only pharmacy in the region that stocks a range called Donjoy, which are these fabulous specialist braces. So we work in with the orthopaedic surgeon and the physios. And those braces need some specialist training and some fitting. So they're really, really good for people with unstable joints or post-knee surgery. And that's become quite a good little side offering as well that a lot of the pharmacies don't have.
Luke, people are busy. They rush into a pharmacy. They want to grab their products or their scripts quick, or they want to just get some quick advice and they want to get out the door and get on with the next thing. How do you slow that down? How do you broach the subject of positioning the extra value that you can provide them without it coming across as maybe like you're just trying to hold them there and sell them more stuff?
No, that's a very good question. Look, we try and encourage good health. And if we don't believe in a certain program or a certain product, we simply won't run it. I think patients can see through when you're trying to sell them something or whether you're trying to be genuine. And we have a little sort of motto that, you know, essentially we want to make a difference and whatever we're selling needs to make a difference. And I think that really comes across when you're explaining the service and how it will help the patient. And we have a lot of other systems as well. A lot of people are busy and, you know, especially given our after hours, a lot of people are finishing work and they want to get home. And we say, look, we have a booking system online. Go online, have a look at the services we have. And they're available through our website and through platforms such as Facebook. And they can go on and see the services that we have and make a booking at a time that suits them. It also spells out the minutes it would take, all that type of stuff. So we just tell them, you know, do you want us to book in for you next week, or would you like to go online and have a look? And that way, you know, they can find a time that's convenient for them. But essentially, we try and sell the program as a benefit to their health, and that's truly what we believe it is.
On the online booking systems and going through Facebook, jumping online, seeing where might be convenient for a patient to book time and come back, how's that technology and that approach been received? Has it been taken up well, or is it something that sort of sits off to the side and just maybe a few people use it?
Look, it's been quite surprising. It's been uptaken really well. To be honest, when I put it in, I thought, look, somewhere like Wagga, it's a little bit, if this was in Sydney, people would be using it. And I thought, look, it won't work in Wagga, but it's part of our booking system that we can integrate it into an online bookings platform. So why not do it? And then we actually are getting a lot of bookings online. We've seen it recently through, you know, people wanting to get a flu shot. That's been our biggest online booker. The second one's medical certificates. So we get a lot of people going online, seeing if they can get a medical certificate via our website, and there's a little book now button, and it just flows through. Then we receive an email saying Joe Bloggs has come in and, you know, would like a medical certificate, and then you just hit approve or not approve, which obviously in 99% of the cases we're approving them all. So it's been quite well received. And to be honest, I was a little bit surprised at its uptake, but it's something that's building each and every year.
And was that something that you came up with, the management team, or was it one of those ideas that the staff had and went, boss, we're just going to implement this?
Quite funnily, it was one that my wife brought up. So she's actually in marketing and she has done a lot of this this type of stuff. To be honest with you, these type of ideas are a bit above my head. But she said, look, why don't I do the website? And at this, you know, we had a big problem with booking people and managing people. As I discussed, we only had one room and we had COPD screening, we had flu shots, we had CPAP consults, we had diabetes educator, and we were finding there was a lot of clashes. So we had to put in that, you know, we really need to start a booking system for this room so people aren't coming in and missing appointments and people aren't coming in and, you know, being disappointed that they can't see someone. So we retrain a lot of our staff, you know, to tell our customers, hey, you know, there's a booking system for a reason. If a customer comes in and we can get them in a walk-in, fantastic. But if they can't, just say, look, you're better off booking in. You know, our diabetes educator is really busy. It's best to book a time. You can always change it. So that way, you know, it's just something that's been a really handy tool in managing a consult room. And, you know, the booking systems that you can get, you can set up multiple rooms. We can have our consult room booked out and our mini space, you know, semi-consult room booked out. And it's just a really good way of organising your patients. So if someone wants a time and has booked a time, they can get in for that appointment.
Wagga Wagga has a strong community focus, Michael. How do you focus on and engage with the community outside of the pharmacy when they're coming in for those services that you guys have spoken about?
Outside of the pharmacy, well, I guess the primary one for us is Facebook. We're pretty active posters on Facebook, and we've got over 800 likes on our page, and we use that as a wonderful billboard for our business to engage with the community. We've got wonderful input from the staff. We get input from Instago, from their partners up in Sydney, and they're terrific for engaging for our patients and letting the ones that aren't, you know, regular visitors to the pharmacy, because everything's, there's sign written in the shop and posters and all that collateral in the pharmacy, but Facebook, we found that as a wonderful tool for engaging with the community. And it's not just outside the pharmacy, that's, you know, even outside Wagga, we're a big regional area and there's towns sort of within a 100K circle around Wagga that use Wagga as their shopping place. So we not only advertise on Facebook here, but we push it out around the smaller towns as well. Our pharmacists work with the local uni, so we've got some of them that are involved in assessing and marking exams. So that's good for us because we get a bit of an eye on who the bright young things are that are coming through our university here in Wagga. Our diabetes educator participates in education sessions for healthcare professionals, not for the public so much as for healthcare professionals. So he's spoken to groups of nurses, physios, dietitians, podiatrists. We found that's been a really good way of forging relationships with those health professionals. We've always been a bit of a home for placement students, for university pharmacy students. As part of their course, they spend a lot of time in the lecture theatre, but they also have time allocated where they go out into the big wide world and do placements in community pharmacy. And we've always encouraged that. So we're a pretty regular landing ground for third and fourth year pharmacy students. Has been primarily in Wagga, but we've had to cast our net a little bit wider in the more recent past with changes to our university here in Wagga. We also have done some work with local physios in falls prevention. I think the pharmacists have been involved speaking at a few group meetings of people in conjunction with the physios about falls prevention. And that's quite an amazing thing because often some of the causes of that can come back to medicine. So the medicine that they're on. So we found that a great way of encouraging our patients to get a meds check because we can see if their medicine might be contributing to their falls risk. And, of course, we do the old favourite for pharmacy. We're involved in sponsorship. So we're involved with AFL, rugby union, football slash soccer bowl, the local bowls club, and we've partnered with a company called Victor, and they've been a fabulous partner for our strapping tape program that we've done. That's enabled us to build some nice relationships with sporting clubs, particularly the rugby union.
Now, Luke, Wagga Wagga is known as the city of good sports, and it's produced some amazing athletes. Sport is clearly a really important part of the community. Do you offer any specialist services or products to align with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you are right. Wagga is very passionate about its sport, and they sort of see themselves as the city of good sports, as they say. And as a result, we've sort of stocked a line of sporting braces, the Don Joy Sporting Range, which are a specialist line of sporting braces that are really good for two people. So, a lot of those people that, like I said, it's the goodest city of good sports, a lot of them are playing well into their 40s and maybe should have retired in their 20s. And some actually are carrying legitimate injuries. So they offer like a legitimate sporting brace that provides support to the patient, which is probably just a little bit a level above what your regular sort of braces or traditional braces in the pharmacy have been. And that way, yeah, patients are able to get out there and play sport with a lighter, more supportive device for them. They're also really good for people coming back from injuries. So just say you've had a knee reconstruction, the brace can be set at certain ranges, so you simply can't extend it past a certain point. And that way it gives the patient a better sort of, confidence that they can go out there and run without that sort of risk of injury. The other line is that they're great for people with chronic conditions. So just say you've got osteoarthritis or a chronic back condition, they have specialist ranges of braces that can offload certain joints. So some of them have a little dial at the side. If you've got a bad knee, and you can offset that pressure where your knee is bad. And they've been a really important tool for us, especially in the rescheduling of codeine and sort of now the recognition of chronic pain. And there's a lot of sort of studies out there that they want to get these people who have a lot of, long-term conditions up and moving and, doing some gentle exercise. Don Joy have a sort of policy or sort of a motto that motion is medicine. So they sort of want to try and get people up and moving and with the assistance of a physio, like a good rehabilitation program, just so their weight gain doesn't increase and then they become more couch bound and then all of a sudden the chronic pain's more of an issue. So we try and work closely with sort of the local healthcare professionals to find a brace that's right for people just so they can get out and get moving and just enjoy their lives better and have a better quality of life.
Luke, I've heard you describe your staff as your biggest asset, and we spoke a little bit about it earlier. So obviously they've been integral to the pharmacy's success. What is your approach to staff management and ensuring that they are engaged with the job and the pharmacy?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. As you said, the staff at the pharmacy are by far our biggest asset. And look, like I pointed out before, we try not to micromanage them. I think if we all have to go to work and you want to make sure the workplace is an enjoyable environment as it can be. That way, sort of if everyone's having a good time and, we work hard, that energy flows onto the customers when they're sort of in the store and they can see that. So we work constantly. We're working as a team, but people need to have the right training as well. Like we have to be on top of our game as far as sort of our training goes, just so we're able to deliver the newest and latest advice to the patient. So we're constantly, investing in the staff's training. And even we're looking to developing those sort of people all throughout the pharmacy at every level, whether it's sort of someone in the front of store or dispense techs or someone in the dispensary, they need to be kept engaged, A, so we can maintain the staff, and B, that they can sort of be interested in what they're doing. And what we've found is when we have highly skilled staff and we have enough numbers of staff that people can take that time to sit down with the patient and discuss their health problems, that they can really deliver on the health outcomes and the goals that the patient wants. So we try and invest that time into the staff so that can be passed on and delivered to the patients.
Michael, with a big staff, I imagine that you need to invest reasonably well in their training and development. How do you do that? What's your approach there?
Well, I guess having a big staff, we're really blessed because we've got a bunch of trainers that work for us. We're really proud of the senior people within our business, our retail manager Sandra and our senior pharmacist. They're quite an amazing bunch. They've spent so long learning, and now they've turned into teachers. So it's almost impossible for Luke and I as owners to get in and do that nitty gritty training. We've got a big bus to drive, but if you can allow your senior staff, you know, we've got one of our senior pharmacists has trained and manages our dose administration, our Webster Pack system. We've got another one of our senior pharmacists that's involved. He manages the compounding side of the business and has trained his own little team around him. Our retail manager concentrates on the retail perspective of the training, and that's very hands-on. Where we encourage our staff to go to every training night that they can possibly get. I mean, we're lucky because we're a larger regional place as some of the companies that we deal with. Their reps have a little bit of a budget to have training nights. So we certainly encourage our staff to go to as many of them as we can. There's not an enormous number of them. It's not like they're every week or anything, but we found those things are fabulous. But I don't think they're any substitute for what you're doing in-house. You know, I think sales reps information traditionally is going to be biased towards that company. So we like to get our guys trained by our own people. So the dispensary techs have their responsibility in training in the Webster, the compounding space, even our John Joy, like our sports medicine braces. You can have a specialist, but we're open 91 hours a week. So your person who's the guru in Don Joy sports places is not going to work 91 hours a week. So you have to make sure that the person that wanders in at 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, because that's when he's not playing footy, can get a knee brace and have someone there that knows what they're talking about.
What are some of the key characteristics you look for when you're employing staff?
Sounds corny, a smile. I've been in business for 25 years now. We've been in South City for 4. But I think if people can look me in the eye and smile, that's a massive start. You know, I think because pharmacy is a retail business, there's no doubt. And that first impression is so important, you know. I always feel that I can take someone who's got a good attitude and give them the knowledge, but I've always found it really, really difficult to find someone who's got the knowledge and teach them the attitude. That's one thing very, very high on my list, that someone will look me in the eye. And that's tough. You know, some of those kids are 17 or 18 and a bit intimidated by meeting the boss, but it doesn't take long to tell whether someone's looking at the shoelaces or whether they're looking at you. So attitude and that initial presentation is really important. They got to be willing to learn. You know, we just touched on the fact of how hard or how important we think training is. You know, the new guys have got to engage with that. I like nothing more than when one of the staff comes to me and says, "I really want to learn about Don Joy, I want to learn about sports braces, I want to learn about compounding," you know, and that's a wonderful thing when they come to you rather than you trying to fill their wheelbarrow up with things they might not be interested in. So we look for people that are willing to learn and listen. And again, you can tell when you're explaining, you know, an asthma spacer to a young person, a new employee, or a relative new employee, it's not hard to figure out whether they're engaging with your conversation and then whether they're able to do that in real life to the customers down the track. The initiative too, probably, Daniel, I think initiative is really important. We're in a big group of staff and we're open long hours, so the senior management aren't always there. So you rely on initiatives, a massive thing for us, because you've got to have guys that don't wait to get told what to do, but they just see it. And they go, do you know, sunglasses could do with a clean, and someone that will get in and do that, or someone will go, the compounding room, you know, the floor needs a clean. So that's a huge one for me, is people that see things that need to be done and just do them.
Michael, you and your business partner, Luke, are on the Clinical Council of the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network. Why is it important that you're part of that network, both from a community and also a business perspective?
I think the name of that organisation probably is a giveaway. It's called the Primary Health Network. If pharmacy considers itself primary health, which I certainly do, and Luke and I certainly do, then it's really important that you do form that network. So the Clinical Council is an advisory council to the local primary health network, and they meet quarterly. It's got members who are doctors, dietitians, we got a psychologist on the council, a couple of physios. So we all work together to try and make sure that the programs that the Primary Health Network are implementing are clinically valid. The Primary Health Network does a health what they call a health needs assessment. So they shop around Wagga, I guess, or the Riverina, and target specific areas that they feel are very important going forward in terms of treating. So the Clinical Council looks at those target areas, and we try and devise plans to combat some of those. We're never going to fix them. You know, they're COPD, diabetes, mental health. We do a lot of work here in Wagga around Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander health, aged care, and preventable admissions into hospital. So, you know, that's like trying to stop the tide coming in to try and block all of those things. But by being on the Clinical Council and knowing what the health network is working on and knowing the areas that they've identified as being deficient, from a business point of view, we're in on the ground floor, because you know what needs the health network is prioritising. It's no coincidence that COPD and diabetes, things that we've identified and run very hard with, just happen to be two of the key areas that the Primary Health Network is concentrating on. They do a lot of work in mental health, and we were able to source some grants out of the Primary Health Network to get staff qualified in a mental health first aid certificate. And we thought outside the box a little bit and thought, well, we can't just ask for our staff to have mental health first aid. So we approached the Primary Health Network and sold the idea that having pharmacy staff all over our area with mental health first aid training would be useful, and they agreed. So we managed to get, Luke and I are really proud, we got 91 guys accredited through our region in mental health first aid. So it fits their brief, the Primary Health Network, because they're working on mental health as one of their priorities. So if you're involved in the Clinical Council and you're hearing those sort of things, your input is helping the community as well. You know, you can't be on those things and have it all self-serving, but when you sit there and you think, well, these guys can see problems in the community in preventable admissions, for example, then you can start to tailor some plans as a business to fit in with those key areas. From a community perspective, well, we get back to the network side of it too, because we've been able to meet and work alongside with a wonderful bunch of dedicated dietitians and physios, and establish some wonderful links with the proactive GPs in Wagga. So I think the networking part of Clinical Council is really, really important.
What would your advice be to other pharmacists and their staff who might be thinking about getting involved in similar health networks in their areas?
I'd say you should put aside your built-in phobia of committees, because I think that they actually are really useful organisations to be involved in as pharmacists. You know, you know, I've mentioned earlier about how I feel the pharmacist-doctor relationship is better than it was. You know, we're not in our own little bubble anymore as pharmacists. You know, we deal, or should deal, we certainly, Luke and I certainly do, deal as closely as possible with the medical people, because we all have this interests of the same person at heart. You know, I would tell anyone, don't forget that we all work for the same person who is the patient. So, you know, some people see committees as onerous things where you sit around and never really resolve anything. Well, I don't agree with that. I think there's certainly, from my experience at Primary Health Network, particularly the clinical council side of it, there is a valuable input that you can make into the health in your region. You know, there is a little bit of benefit in it for us as well as being pharmacists, because you know what the government's looking at. So if you go to Primary Health Network and they're saying that they see a deficiency or an area that needs some work, let's take COPD, for example, and they say at a meeting that we think COPD is underdiagnosed, and you're not sitting in the room and thinking, how can we contribute to solving that, then it gives you wonderful thinking time. So luckily those meetings are only every 3 months, because I reckon Luke and I spend the next 3 months trying to unravel any opportunities that might have arisen out of the previous meeting. So that's where our COPD screening program grew from. It's where our mental health first aid accreditation grew from finding out where the needs were and getting off your backside and doing something about it.
Apart from winning awards, what evidence do you have that the transition to professional services has been a benefit to the business?
There's probably a few parts to that answer, Daniel. I think financially is one. Let's face it, the price disclosure and changes to the way medicines are priced and the way pharmacists are paid for our core business, which is dispensing prescriptions, the income from that has dropped over the last few years, and the government's tried very, very hard to and worked extremely efficiently from their point of view at reducing medicines, the cost of medicines. The generic program's done amazing things in that for government as well. Unfortunately, when government's saving lots of money, they're invariably taking it away from somebody else. And pharmacy is the industry that's really suffered through that price disclosure legislation over the last few years. So for most of us in pharmacy, whatever, all of us, there's a hole in our bottom line that's disappeared from price disclosure that you have to fill with something. And to Luke and I, professional services are the logical way to fill some of that gap. I think, you know, to this point, pharmacists have probably found it difficult to charge what we see as a fair price for some of those things. We give a lot of advice for free, but thankfully over the last few years, the government has seen the benefit of what pharmacy can do, and the flu vaccine program is a classic example that we can now very professionally and very correctly administer flu vaccines within our pharmacy and charge for it. And the government loves that, because if you came into my pharmacy down and got a flu shot, you would pay me, but the government pays nothing. So they can save some money, and we can charge a fair price for that. The MedCheck program was instituted by the government to give us an opportunity to sit down with patients one-to-one within the pharmacy, go through their medicines, find any side effects, any problems, any things they're having, and then refer back to the doctor. And the patient doesn't pay, but the government pays for that. The government pays for HMRs, the home medicine reviews. So again, the government sees a benefit in having a pharmacist go through a patient's medication regime and in conjunction with the GP, we can't make adjustments, we can recommend adjustments be made. So a lot of those professional services, our compounding, our COPD screening, our diabetes education, has filled or gone away towards filling the gap that the government's reduced prices have left with us. So financially, professional services are helping the business. I think one of the things that we probably didn't really count on that I've seen amazing is motivation for your staff. You know, I think all these young pharmacists study at university and they're taught, clinically, they're taught really, really well about the things they can do in pharmacy. And they're taught how to give vaccines and they're taught how to monitor blood pressure and they're taught how to do screenings. Sometimes they finish up in businesses that either don't see that as a priority or aren't staffed to allow it. And you can almost, you know, I meet a lot of young pharmacists that are a little lost in their jobs because they don't feel like they're doing what they train for. Now, I can't say that about the guys that work for us. You know, we've got an amazing young team. I would say that professional services is motivational for them because you can just see them thinking, this is what I went to uni for. This is what I studied for. So when you've got them doing the things that they trained for rather than, you know, mass-produced stick labels on boxes kind of pharmacy, which, you know, there's a place for that, but professional services gives the young guys a reason to come to work, and we see it in them every day. They just love it. The third one I'd probably put down is the opportunity that professional services gives us for collaboration with our fellow health professionals. And I mentioned before about that health network part of it. Well, professional services certainly allows that. You know, our COPD screening program is useless if we're not referring the patients with suboptimal lung function to a specialist. Having a diabetes educator working for you in a little silo or by himself is a complete waste of time if he's not cross-referring to the GP about management and to the patient's dietitian or to their podiatrist. You know, it's a waste of time. We can't sell these fabulous orthopaedic braces that are designed for post-orthopaedic surgery treatment if you're not dealing with the orthopaedic surgeon in the first place. You can't do that by yourself. You need their cooperation. You can't do, you haven't mentioned sleep apnea up till now, but I consider sleep apnea, the treatment of sleep apnea, a professional service. And again, you can't do that all by yourself. You need referrals, and so that's information coming to us from the doctor, but you need that feedback back to the doctor and said, yeah, we are treating Mrs. Brown and she's doing remarkably well, and here's her data, she's really progressing. So professional services, from my point of view, financially they've helped us. Getting staff motivated and excited about coming to work, that's helped us. And also in how it helps us interact with our health professionals in Wagga, I think there's another benefit there.
Luke, can you share a story of a patient you've helped that really makes you and the team proud and sums up your move to professional services?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, probably one of the best stories recently is sort of a gentleman who came in for a lung function test on our COPD screening day. And basically this gentleman's in his mid-40s who was a smoker, and he produced lower than expected results, which obviously prompts us to send the patient to the doctor for some further spirometry. And this patient was tested and was actually not diagnosed with COPD, but diagnosed with chronic asthma, which he never knew he actually had. So he thought his smoking or he couldn't breathe was just due to the fact that he's always been a smoker. So from that point, he quit smoking and started medications to treat his asthma. And now his lung function has improved significantly. He's actually given up his cigarettes and he sort of has taken up to doing triathlons. He said to me he's just finished his second, and he said he's come dead last in both of them. But the fact is that he's out there doing it, which is you know, the main thing for him. And now he's sort of starting to come off all his medication. He's lost a lot of weight. His blood pressure's dropped. His diabetes is improving. And he says that that's the point that he got the wake-up call, and credits that lung screening day for the point that he turned everything around with his health. And that's something that, you know, all our staff got in the industry to do, was to help people. And that's why we get into professional services. And that's really why we love being in the industry that we're in, so we can help people and deliver those type of health outcomes.
Luke van der Rijn and Michael O'Reilly, gents, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your success in transitioning South City Wagga Wagga to a professional services pharmacy.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me.
I appreciate the opportunity, Daniel. It's been a pleasure.
Congratulations again to Luke and Michael and the whole team at South City Wagga Wagga for winning the Excellence in Community Engagement Award at the 2018 APP Conference and ultimately the Guild Pharmacy of the Year. It's a huge achievement and one I know they are really, really proud of. Thanks to Luke and Michael for finding some time to share their journey, its successes and its challenges, and I trust you, the listener, gained some really valuable insights. If you're thinking of exploring some of the concepts that Luke and Michael spoke about, members, don't forget that you can always contact your local Guild branch for further information and support, or you can visit guild.org.au to access a complete range of diagnostic and operational support tools to assist you in identifying current opportunities available to your pharmacy, target business areas that require attention, and then provide the operational support needed to do something about it. Or you may wish to explore the Guild's learning and development offerings, education and training opportunities that equip pharmacists, pharmacy and dispensary assistants, and interns to grow and transform their business and deliver high quality patient health outcomes. Visit guild.org.au for more information. Until next time, I'm Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 2 of the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast, brought to you by the Pharmacy Guild of Australia.
The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way. For more resources, to access support or advice, or to view this episode's show notes, visit guild.org.au.